Deishil Hale Seamus.
Send us Bright One, Light One, Hawhorn, Quickening, and Womb Fruit.
Send us Bright One, Light One, Hawhorn, Quickening, and Womb Fruit.
Send us Bright One, Light One, Hawhorn, Quickening, and Womb Fruit.
Hoopsa, boya boy, hoopsa. Hoopsa, boya boy, hoopsa. Hoopsa, boya boy, hoopsa.
Universally, that person's acumen is esteemed very little perceptive. Concerning whatsoever matters are being held as most profitably by mortals with sapience endowed to be studied, who is ignorant of that which the most indoctrinate erudite, and certainly by reason of that in them, high minds ornament, deserving of veneration, constantly maintain, when, by general consent, they affirm that, other circumstances being equal, by no exterior splendour is the prosperity of a nation more efficaciously asserted than by the measure of how far forward may have progressed the tribute of its solicitude for that proliferant continuance, which, of evils the original, if it be absent, when fortunately present, constitutes the certain sign of omnipotent nature's incorrupted benefaction. For who is there, who anything of some significance has apprehended, but is conscious that that exterior splendour may be the surface of a downward-tending, lutulent reality? Or, on the contrary, anyone so is there inilluminated, as not to perceive that, as no nature's boon can contend against the bounty of increase, so it behoves every most just citizen to become the exhortator and admonisher of his semblables, and to tremble, lest what had in the past been by the nation excellently commenced, might be in the future not with similar excellence accomplished. If an inveterate habit shall have gradually traduced the honourable by ancestors transmitted customs to that thither of profundity, that one was audacious excessively, who would have the hardihood to rise, affirming that no more odious offence can for any one be than to oblivious neglect to consign that evangel, simultaneously command and promise, which on all mortals, with prophecy of abundance or with diminution's menace, that exalted of reiteratedly procreating function ever irrevocably enjoined.
It is not why, therefore, we shall wonder if, as the best historians relate, among the Celts, who nothing that was not in its nature admirable admired, the art of medicine shall have been highly honoured. Not to speak of hostels, leper yards, sweating chambers, plague graves, their greatest doctors, the O'Sheels, the O'Hickeys, the O'Lees, have sedulously set down the divers methods by which the sick and the relapsed found again health, whether the malady had been the trembling, withering, or loose Boyconnell flux. Certainly in every public work which in it anything of gravity contains, preparation should be with importance commensurate, and therefore a plan was by them adopted, whether by having preconsidered or as the maturation of experience, it is difficult in being said, which the discrepant opinions of subsequent inquirers are not up to the present congrued to render manifest, whereby maternity was so far from all accident possibility removed, that whatever care the patient in that all-hardest of woman hour chiefly required, and not solely for the copiously opulent, but also for her who, not being sufficiently moneyed, scarcely, and often not even scarcely, could subsist, valiantly and for an inconsiderable emolument was provided. To her nothing already, then and thenceforward, was any way able to be molestful, for this chiefly felt all citizens, except with proliferant mothers, prosperity at all not to can be, and as they had received eternity, gods, mortals, generation to befit them her beholding, when the case was so having itself, parturient in vehicle, thereward carrying desire immense among all one another, was impelling on of her to be received into that domicile. O thing of prudent nation, not merely in being seen, but also even in being related worthy of being praised, that they, her, by anticipation, went seeing mother, that she, by them, suddenly to be about to be cherished, had been begun, she felt.
Before born, babe bliss had. Within womb, one he worshipped. Whatever in that one case done, commodiously done was. A couch by midwives, attended with wholesome food, reposeful, clean as swaddles, as though forthbringing were now done, and by wise foresight set. But to this no less of what drugs there is need, and surgical implements, which are pertaining to her case, not omitting aspect of all very distracting spectacles, in various latitudes by our terrestrial orb, offer together with images divine and human, the cogitation of which by sejunct females is to tumescence conducive or eases issue in the high, sunbright, well-built, fair home of mothers, when, ostensibly far gone and reproductive, it is come by her thereto to lie in her term up. Some man at wayfaring was stood by house door at night's oncoming. Of Israel's folk was that man that on earth wandering far had fared. Stark ruth of man his errand that him lone led till that house. Of that house a horn is lord. 70 beds keeps he there, teeming mothers, are wont that they lie for to thole and bring forth bairns hail. So God's angel to Mary quoth, watchers tway their walk, white sisters in ward sleepless, smarts they still, sickness soothing, in 12 moons thrice 100. Truest Bethanes they twain are, for horn holding wariest ward. In ward wary, the watcher hearing come, that man, mild-hearted, eft rising with swire e wimple to him, her gate wide undid. Lo, 11 leaping lightens in eye-blink Ireland's westward welkin. Full she dread that God Rika all mankind would fordo with water for his evil sins. Christ rued made she on breastbone, and him drew that he would rather infare under her thatch. That man, her will wotting worthful, went in Horn's house. Loath to irk in Horn's hall, hat-holding, the seeker stood. On her stow he ere was living with dear wife and lovesome daughter, that then over land and sea-floor 9 year had long outwandered. Once her in town hath meeting, he to her bow had not doffed. Her to forgive now, he craved with good ground, of her allowed that of him, swift-seen face, has so young then had looked. Light-swift her eyes kindled, bloom of blushes his word-winning. As her eyes then ungut his weed swat, therefore sorrow she feared. Glad after she was, that e'er a dread was. Her he asked, if o'her doctor, tidings sent from far coast, and she, with grateful sigh, him answered, that o'her doctor in heaven was. Sad was the man that were to hear, that him so heavied in bowels rootful. All she there told him, ruing death for friend so young, albeit sore, unwilling, God's right wiseness to withstay. She said that he had a fair sweet death, through God his goodness, with mass priest to be shriven, holy housel, and sick men's oil to his limbs. The man then, right earnest, asked the nun of which death the dead man was died. And the nun answered him, and said that he was died in Mona Island, through belly crab, 3 year agone come Childermas. And she prayed to God, the all-rootful, to have his dear soul in his undeathliness. He heard her sad words, inhaled hat, sad staring. So stood they there both a while, in one hope, sorrowing one with other.
Therefore, every man, look to that last end, that is thy death, and the dust that gripeth on every man that is born of woman. For as he came naked forth from his mother's womb, so naked shall he wend him at the last, for to go as he came. The man that was come into the house then spoke to the nursing woman, and he asked her how it fared with the woman that lay there in childbed. The nursing woman answered him and said that that woman was in throes now full 3 days, and that it would be a hard birth, uneath to bear, but that now in a little it would be. She said thereto that she had seen many births of women, but never was none so hard as was that woman's birth. Then she set it forth all to him, that time was, had lived nigh that house. The man hearkened to her words, for he felt with wonder women's woe and the travail that they have of motherhood. And he wondered to look on her face, that was a young face for any man to see, but yet was she left after long years a handmaid. 9, 12 blood flows, chiding her childless.
And whiles they spake, the door of the castle was opened, and there nighed them a mickle noise, as of many that sat there at meat. And there came against the place as they stood a young learning knight, yclept Dixon. And the traveller Leopold was couth to him, sithen it had happed that they had had ado each with other in the House of Misericord, where this learning knight lay, because the traveller Leopold came there to be healed, for he was sore wounded in his breast by a spear wherewith a horrible and dreadful dragon was smitten him, for which he did do make a salve of volatile salt and chrism as much as he might suffice. And he said now that he should go into that castle for to make merry with them that were there. And the traveller Leopold said that he should go otherwhither, for he was a man of cautels and a subtle. Also the lady was of his avis, and reproved the learning knight, though she trowed well that the traveller had said thing that was false for his subtility. But the learning knight would not hear say nay, nor do her mandament, nay have him in aught contrarious to his list. And he said how it was a marvellous castle. And the traveller Leopold went into the castle for to rest him for a space, being sore of limb after many marches, environing in divers lands, and sometimes venery. And in the castle was set a board that was of the birchwood of Finlandy, and it was upheld by 4 dwarf men of that country, but they durst not move more for enchantment. And on this board were frightful swords and knives that are made in a great cavern by swinking demons out of white flames that they fix in the horns of buffaloes and stags that there are bound marvellously. And there were vessels that are wrought by magic of Mahound out of sea sand and the air by a warlock with his breath that he blares into them like to bubbles. And full fair cheer and rich was on the board, that no wight could devise a fuller ne richer. And there was a vat of silver that was moved by craft to open, in the which lay strange fishes withouten heads, though misbelieving men nigh that this be possible thing without they see it, natheless they are so. And these fishes lie in an oily water brought there from Portugal land, because of the fatness that therein is like to the juices of the olive press. And also it was marvel to see in that castle how by magic they make a compost out of fecund wheat kidneys out of Calde, that by aid of certain angry spirits that they do into it swells up wondrously like to a vast mountain. And they teach the serpents there to entwine themselves up on long sticks out of the ground, and of the scales of these serpents they brew out a brewage like to mead. And the learning knight let pour for child Leopold a draught, and halp thereto the while all they that were there drank every each. And child Leopold did up his beaver for to pleasure him, and took apertly, somewhat in amity, for he never drank no manner of mead, which he then put by, and anon full privily he voided the more part in his neighbour glass, and his neighbour wist not of his while. And he sat down in that castle with them for to rest him there a while. Thanked be Almighty God.
This meanwhile this good sister stood by the door, and begged them at the reverence of Jesu, our altar liege lord, to leave their wassailing, for there was above one quick-wit child, a gentle dame, whose time hied fast. Sir Leopold heard on the up-floor cry on high, and he wondered what cry that it was, whether of child or woman. "And I marvel," said he, "that it be not come more now. Meseems it dureth over long." And he was ware, and saw a franklin that hight Lenehan on that side the table, that was older than any of the t'other, and for that they both were knights virtuous in the one emprise, and eke by cause that he was elder, he spoke to him full gently. "But," said he, "or it be long too, she will bring forth by God his bounty and have joy of her childing, for she hath waited marvellous long." And the franklin that had drunken said, expecting each moment to be her next. Also he took the cup that stood tofore him, for him needed never none asking nor desiring of him to drink. "And now drink," said he, "fully delectably," and he quaffed as far as he might to their both's health, for he was a passing good man of his lustiness. And Sir Leopold, that was the goodliest guest that ever sat in Scholar's Hall, and that was the meekest man and the kindest that ever laid husbandly hand under hen, and that was the very truest knight of the world, one that ever did minion service to Lady Gentle, pledged him courtly in the cup. Woman's woe with wonder pondering. Now let us speak of that fellowship that was there to the intent to be drunken, and they might. There was a sort of scholars along either side the board, that is, to wit, Dixon Eclep Junior, of St. Mary Merciables, with his other fellows Lynch and Madden, scholars of medicine, and the franklin that hight Lenehan, and one from Alba Longa, one Carruthers, and young Stephen that had mean of a freer that was at head of the board, and Costello, that men Cleppen Punch Costello, all long of a mastery of him erewhile guested. And of all them reserved young Stephen, he was the most drunken, that demanded still of more mead, and beside the meek Sir Leopold. But on young Malachy they waited, for that he promised to have come, and such as intended to know goodness said how he had broke his avow. And Sir Leopold sat with them, for he bore fast friendship to Sir Simon, and to this his son young Stephen, and for that his languor becalmed him there after longest wanderings, insomuch as they feasted him for that time in the honourablest manner. Ruth read him, love led on with will to wander, loath to leave. For they were right witty scholars, and he heard their our sounds each gen other, as touching birth and righteousness, young Madden maintaining that put such case, it were hard the wife to die, for so it had fallen out a matter of some year agone with a woman of a blarner in Horn's house, that now was trespassed out of this world, and the self night next before her death, all leeches and pothecaries had taken counsel of her case. And they said farther she should live, because in the beginning they said the woman should bring forth in pain, and wherefore they that were of this imagination affirmed how young Madden had said truth, for he had conscience to let her die. And not few, and of these was young Lynch, were in doubt that the world was now right evil governed, as it was never other, howbeit the mean people believed it otherwise. But the law nor his judges did provide no remedy, a redress God grant. This was scant said, but all cried with one acclaim, nay, by our Virgin Mother, the wife should live and the babe to die. In colour whereof they waxed hot upon that head, what with argument and what for their drinking, but the franklin Lenehan was prompt each when to pour them ale, so that at the least way mirth might not lack. Then young Madden showed all the whole affair, and when he said how that she was dead, and how for holy religion's sake, by rede of palmer and beadsman, and for a vow he had made to St. Ultan of Abracan, her goodman husband would not let her death, whereby they were all wondrous grieved. To whom young Stephen had these words following, Murmur says he's eke oft among lay folk. Both babe and parent now glorify their maker, the one in limbo gloom, the other in purge fire. But, Gramercy, what of those God-possible souls that we nightly impossibilize? Which is the sin against the Holy Ghost, very God, Lord, and giver of life? For, sirs, he said, our lust is brief. We are means to those small creatures within us, and nature has other ends than we. Then said Dixon Jr. to Punch Costello, whist he what ends? But he had overmuch drunken, and the best word he could have of him was that he would ever dishonest a woman, whoso she were, or wife, or maid, or leman, if it so fortuned him to be delivered of his spleen of lusty head. Whereat Crothers of Alba Longa sang young Malachy's praise of that beast the unicorn. How, once in the millennium, he cometh by his horn. The other all this while pricked forward their gibes wherewith they did malice him. Witnessing all, and several by St. Foutinus's engines, that he was able to do any manner of thing that lay in man to do. Thereat laughed they all right jocundly, only young Stephen and Sir Leopold, which never durst laugh too open by reason of a strange humour which he would not bewray, and also for that he rued for her that bare whoso she might be or wheresoever. Then spoke young Stephen Orgulous of Mother Church that would cast him out of her bosom, of Laura of Canons, of Lilith, patron of abortions, of bigness wrought by wind of seeds of brightness, or by potency of vampires mouth to mouth, or, as Virgilius saith, by the influence of the occident, or by the reek of moonflower, or, and she lie with a woman which a man has but lain with, effectu secuto, or peradventure in her bath, according to the opinions of Averroes and Moses Maimonides. He said also how at the end of the second month a human soul was infused, and how in all a holy mother foldeth ever souls for God's greater glory, whereas that earthly mother, which was but a dam to bring forth beastly, should die by cannon. For so saith he that holdeth the fisherman's seal, even that blessed Peter on which rock was Holy Church for all ages founded. All they bachelors then asked of Sir Leopold, would he in like case so jeopard her person as risk life to save life? A wariness of mind he would answer, as fitted all, and laying hand to jaw, he said dissembling, as his wont was, that as it was informed him, who had ever loved the art of physic as might a layman, and agreeing also with his experience of so seldom seen an accident, it was good for that Mother Church belike at one blow had birth and death pence, and in such sort delivery he skipped their questions. "That is truth, Pardy," said Dixon, "and, or I err, a pregnant word." Which hearing, young Stephen was a marvellous glad man, and he averred that he who stealeth from the poor lendeth to the Lord, for he was of a wild manner when he was drunken, and that he was now in that taking it appeared eftsoons. But Sir Leopold was passing grave, maugre his word, by cause he still had pity of the terror-causing shrieking of shrill women in their labour, and as he was minded of his good Lady Marian, that had borne him an only man-child, which on his 11th day on liver died, and no man of art could save, so dark his destiny. And she was wondrous stricken of heart for that evil hap, and for his burial did him on a fair corselet of lamb's wool, the flower of the flock, lest he might perish utterly and lie a-keeled, for it was then about the midst of the winter. And now Sir Leopold, that had of his body no man-child for an heir, looked upon him, his friend's son, and was shut up in sorrow for his forepast happiness, and as sad as he was that him failed a son of such gentle courage, for all accounted him of real parts, so grieved he also in no less measure for young Stephen, for that he lived riotously with those wastrels and murdered his goods with whores.
About that present time, young Stephen filled all cups that stood empty, so as there remained but little mo, if the prudenter had not shadowed their approach from him that still plied it very busily, who, praying for the intentions of the sovereign pontiff, he gave them for a pledge the vicar of Christ, which also, as he said, is vicar of Bray. "Now drink we," quoth he, "of this mazer, and quaff ye this mead, which is not indeed parcel of my body, but my soul's bodiment. Leave ye fraction of bread to them that live by bread alone. Be not afeard neither for any want, for this will comfort more than the other will dismay. See ye here? And he showed them glistering coins of the tribute, and goldsmith's notes the worth of £2.19 that he had, he said, for a song which he writ. They all admired to see the foresaid riches in such dearth of money as was here before. His words were then these as followeth. Know all men, he said, time's ruins build eternity's mansions. What means this? Desire's wind blasts the thorn tree, but after it becomes from a bramble bush to be a rose upon the rood of time. Mark me now. In woman's womb word is made flesh, but in the spirit of the Maker all flesh that passes becomes the word that shall not pass away. This is the post-creation. Omnis caro ad te veniet. No question but her name is puissant, who haven't tried the dear course of our agonbuyer, healer, and herd. Our mighty mother, and mother most venerable. And Bernardus saith aptly that she hath an omnipotentium dei pare supplicem, that is, to wit, an almightiness of petition, because she is the second Eve, and she won us, saith Augustine too, whereas that other, our grandam, which we are linked up with by successive anastomosis of navel cords, sold us all, seed, breed, and generation, for a penny pippin. But here is the matter now. Or she knew him, that second, I say, and was but creature of her creature, Vergine madre filia di tuo figlio, or she knew him not, and then stands she in the one denial or ignorancy with Peter Piscator, who lives in the house that Jack built, and with Joseph the joiner, patron of the happy demise of all unhappy marriages, parce que Monsieur Léo Taxil nous a dit que qu'il avait mis dans cette fichue position c'était le sacré pigeon, ventre de Dieu. Ain't they there? Transubstantiality, odor consubstantiality, but in no case subsubstantiality. And all cried out upon it for a very scurvy word. A pregnancy without joy, he said, a birth without pangs, a body without blemish, a belly without bigness. Let the lewd with faith and fervour worship. With will we withstand, with say. Hereupon Punch Costello dinged with his fist upon the board, and would sing a bawdy catch, Stabu Stabella, about a wench that was put in pod of a jolly swashbuckler in Almany, which he did now attack. The first 3 months she was not well, Stabu. When here Nurse Quigley from the door angrily bid them hiss, ye should shame you. Nor was it not meet, as she remembered them, being her mind was to have all orderly against Lord Andrew came. For because she was jealous that no gastful turmoil might shorten the honour of her guard. It was an ancient and a sad matron of a sedate look and Christian walking, in habit dun, beseeming her megrims and wrinkled visage. Nor did her hortative want of its effect, for incontinently Punch Costello was of them all embraided, and they reclaimed the churl with civil rudeness some, and with menace of blandishments others, whilst all chode with him. A murrain seized the dolt. What a devil he would be at, thou chuff, thou puny, thou gotten-the-peas straw, thou losel, thou chitterling, thou spawn of a rebel, thou dyke-dropped, thou abortion, thou, to shut up his drunken drool out of that like a curse of God ape. The good Sir Leopold, that had for his cognizance the flower of quiet, Margerine gentle, advising also the time's occasion as most sacred, and most worthy to be most sacred. In Horn's house rest should reign. To be short, this passage was scarce by, when Master Dixon of Mary in Eccles, goodly grinning, asked young Stephen what was the reason why he had not sided to take friar's vows. And he answered him, obedience in the womb, chastity in the tomb, but involuntary poverty all his days. Master Lenehan at this made return that he had heard of those nefarious deeds, and how, as he heard hereof counted, he had besmirched the lily virtue of a confiding female, which was corruption of minors. And they all intershowed it, too, waxing merry and toasting to his fathership. But he said very entirely, it was clean contrary to their suppose, for he was the eternal son and ever virgin. Thereat mirth grew in them the more, and they rehearsed to him his curious rite of wedlock for the disrobing and deflowering of spouses, as the priests use in Madagascar Island. She to be in guise of white and saffron, her groom in white and grain, with burning of nard and tapers, on a bride-bed, while clerks sung Kyries and the anthem, Ut noveta sexus omnis corporis mysterium, till she was there unmaided. He gave them then a much admirable Hymen Minim, by those delicate poets Master John Fletcher and Master Francis Beaumont, that is in their maid's tragedy, that was writ for a light twining of lovers. To bed, was the burden of it, to be played with accompanable consent upon the virginals.
An exquisite dulcet epithalame of most mollificate of swadency for juveniles amatory, whom the odoriferous flambeaux of the paranymphs have escorted to the quadrupedal proscenium of connubial communion. Well met they were, said Master Dixon, joyed. But harkee, young sir, better were they named Beaumont and Letcher, for, by my troth, of such a mingling much might come. Young Stephen said, indeed, to his best remembrance, they had but the one doxy between them, and she of the stews, to make shift with in delights amorous, for life ran very high in those days, and the custom of the country approved with it. Greater love than this, he said, no man hath, that a man lay down his wife for his friend. Go thou and do likewise. Thus, or words to that effect, said Zarathustra, sometime Regius professor of French letters to the University of Oxtail, nor breathed there ever that man to whom mankind was more beholden. Bring a stranger within thy tower, it will go hard, but thou wilt have the second best bed. Orate fratres pro meme tipso, and all the people shall say Amen. Remember, Aaron, thy generations and thy days of old, how thou settest little by me and by my word, and broughtest in a stranger to my gates, to commit fornication in my sight, and to wax fat, and kick like Jeshurum. Therefore hast thou sinned against the light, and hast made me, thy lord, to be the slave of servants. Return, return, clan Milly, forget me not, O my Lycian. Why hast thou done this abomination before me, that thou didst spurn me for a merchant of jalaps, and didst deny me to the Roman and the Indian of dark speech, with whom thy daughters did lie luxuriously. Look forth now, my people, upon the land of behest, even from Horeb and from Nebo and from Pisgah and from the horns of Hatton, unto a land flowing with milk and money. But thou hast suckled me with a bitter milk. My moon and my sun thou hast quenched for ever, and thou hast left me alone for ever in the dark ways of my bitterness, and with a kiss of ashes hast thou kissed my mouth. This tenebrosity of the interior, he proceeded to say, hath not been illumined by the wit of the Septuagint, nor so much as mentioned, for the Orient from on high, which brake hell's gates, visited a darkness that was foraneous. Assuefaction minorates atrocities, as Tully saith of his darling Stoics, and Hamlet his father showeth the prince no blister of combustion. The Adiaphane in the noon of life is an Egypt's plague, which in the nights of prenativity and post-mortemity is their most proper ubi and quomodo. And as the ends and ultimates of all things accord in some mean and measure with their inceptions and originals, that same multiplicit concordance which leads forth growth from birth, accomplishing by a retrogressive metamorphosis that minishing and ablation towards the final which is agreeable unto nature, so is it with our subsolar being. The aged sisters draw us into life. We wail, batten, sport, clip, clasp, sunder, dwindle, die. Over us dead they bend. First saved from water of old Nile, among bulrushes, a bed of fasciated wattles. At last, the cavity of a mountain, an occulted sepulchre amid the conclamation of the hillcat and the ossifrage. And as no man knows the ubicity of his tumulus, nor to what processes we shall thereby be ushered, nor whether to Tophet or to Edenville, in the like way is all hidden when we would backward see from what region of remoteness the whatness of our who-ness hath fetched his whence-ness.
Thereto Punch Costello roared out mainly, Etienne, chanson! But he loudly bid them, Lo, wisdom hath built herself a house, this vast, majestic, long-established vault, the crystal palace of the Creator, all in apple-pie order, a penny for him who finds the pea. Behold the mansion reared by Deedle Jack, see the malt stored in many a refluent sack, in the proud cirque of Jack John's bivouac.
A black crack of noise in the street here, a lack bawled back. Loud on left Thor thundered, in anger awful the hammer hurler. Came now the storm that hissed his heart, and Master Lynch bade him have a care to flout and wit wanton as the god self was angered for his hell prate and paganry. And he that had erst challenged to be so doughty waxed pale as they might all mark, and shrank together, and his pitch that was before so haught uplift was now of a sudden quite plucked down, and his heart shook within the cage of his breast as he tasted the rumour of that storm. Then did some mock, and some jeer, and Punch Costello fell hard again to his yale, which Master Linehan vowed he would do after. And he was indeed but a word and a blow on any the least colour. But the braggart boaster cried that an old nobodaddy was in his cups, it was much what indifferent, and he would not lag behind his lead. But this was only to dye his desperation, as cowed he crouched in Horn's hall. He drank indeed at one draught to pluck up a heart of any grace, for it thundered long, rumblingly, over all the heavens, so that Master Madden, being godly certain whiles, knocked him on his ribs upon that crack of doom, and Master Bloom at the braggart's side spoke to him calming words to slumber his great fear, advertising how it was no other thing but a hubbub noise that he heard, the discharge of fluid from the thunderhead, look you, having taken place, and all of the order of a natural phenomenon.
But was young Boasthard's fear vanquished by Karma's words? No, for he had in his bosom a spike named Bitterness, which could not by words be done away. And was he then neither calm like the one, nor godly like the other? He was neither, as much as he would have liked to be either. But could he not have endeavoured to have found again, as in his youth, the bottle holiness, that then he lived withal? Indeed not, for grace was not there to find that bottle. Heard he then in that clap the voice of the god bring forth, or what Karma said, a hubbub of phenomenon? Heard? Why, he could not but hear, unless he had plugged up the tube understanding, which he had not done. For through that tube he saw that he was in the land of phenomenon, where he must for a certain one day die, as he was like the rest too, a passing show. And would he not accept to die like the rest and pass away? By no means would he, and make more shows according as men do with wives, which phenomenon has commanded them to do by the book law. Then wotted he naught of that other land which is called Believe on Me, that is the land of promise which behoves to the king delightful, and shall be for ever, where there is no death and no birth, neither wiving nor mothering, at which all shall come as many as believe on it? Yes, Pius had told him of that land, and Chaste had pointed him to the way, But the reason was that in the way he fell in with a certain whore of an eye-pleasing exterior, whose name, she said, is Bird in the Hand, and she beguiled him wrong ways from the true path by her flatteries, that she said to him as, "Ho, you pretty man, turn aside hither, and I will show you a brave place." And she lay at him so flatteringly that she had him in her grot, which is named Two in the Bush, or by some learned, carnal concupiscence. This was it. What all that company that sat there at Commons in manse of mothers, the most lusted after, and if they met with this whore Bird in the Hand, which was within all foul plagues, monsters, and a wicked devil, they would strain the last, but they would make at her and know her. For regarding Believe on Me, they said it was naught else but notion, and they could conceive no thought of it, for first, Two in the Bush, whither she ticed them, was the very goodliest grot, and in it were four pillows, on which were four tickets, with these words printed on them, Pickaback and Topsy-Turvy, and Shameface and Cheek by Jowl, and second, for that foul plague, all pox, and the monsters, they cared not for them, for Preservative had given them a stout shield of oxen gut. And third, that they might take no hurt neither from offspring, that was that wicked devil by virtue of this same shield which was named Killchild. So were they all in their blind fancy, Mr. Cavill and Mr. Sometimes Godly, Mr. Ape Swillale, Mr. False Franklin, Mr. Dainty Dixon, Young Boasthard, and Mr. Cautious Karma. Wherein, O wretched company, were ye all deceived? For that was the voice of the God that was in a very grievous rage, that he would presently lift his arm and spill their souls for their abuses and their spillings done by them contrariwise to his word, which forth to bring brenningly biddeth.
So, Thursday, 16th June, Patrick Dignam laid in clay, of an apoplexy, and, after hard drought, please God, rained. A bargeman coming in by water, a 50 mile or thereabout with turf, saying the seed won't sprout. Fields athirst, very sad-coloured, and stung mightily. The quags and tofts, too. Hard to breathe, and all the young quicks clean consumed without sprinkle this long while back, as no man remembered to be without. The rosy buds all gone brown and spread out blobs, and on the hills naught but dry flag and faggots that would catch at first fire. All the world saying, for aught they knew, the big wind of last February, a year that did havoc the land so pitifully, a small thing beside this barrenness. But by and by, as said, this evening after sundown, the wind sitting in the west, biggish swollen clouds to be seen as the night increased, and the weather-wise pouring up at them, and some sheet lightnings at first and after, past 10 of the clock. One great stroke with a long thunder, and did a brace of shakes all scupper, pell-mell within door for the smoking shower, the men making shelter for their straws with a clout or kerchief, women folk skipping off with kirtles catched up soon as the pour came. In Ely Place, Maggot Street, Duke's Lawn, thence through Merrion Green up to Hollis Street, a swash of water running that was before bone dry, and not one chair or coach or fiacre seen about. But no more crack after that first. Over against the right on Mr. Justice Fitzgibbon's door, that is to sit with Mr. Healy the lawyer upon the college lands, Mal Mulligan, a gentleman's gentleman, that had but come from Mr. Moore's, the writer's, that was a papish, but is now, folks say, a good Williamite, chanced against Alec Bannon in a cut bob, which are now in with dance cloaks of Kendal Green, that was new got to town from Mullingar with the stage, where his cause and Malem's brother will stay a month yet, till St. Swithin, and asks what in the earth he does there,
He bound home, and he to Andrew Horns, being stayed for to crush a cup of wine, so he said, but would tell him of a skittish heifer, big of her age, and beef to the heel, and all this while poured with rain, and so both together on to Horns. There Leop Bloom of Crawford's Journal, sitting snug with a covey of wags, likely brangling fellows, Dixon Junior, scholar of my Lady of Mercy, Vin Lynch, a Scots fellow, Will Madden, T. Lenehan, very sad for a racing horse he fancied, and Stephen D., Leop Bloom there for a languor he had, but was now better, he having dreamed tonight of a strange fancy of his dame, Mrs. Moll, with red slippers on, in a pair of turkey trunks, which is thought by those in ken to be for a change. And Mistress Purefoy there, that got in through pleading her belly, and now on the stools, poor body, 2 days past her term, the midwife saw put to it and cod deliver. She, queasy for a bowl of rice slop that is a shrewd dryer up of the insides, had her breath very heavy more than good, and should be a bully boy from the knocks, they say, but God give a soon issue. 'Tis her 9th chick to live, I hear, and Lady Day bit off her last chick's nails that was then a 12-month, and with other 3 all breast-fed that died, written out in a fair hand in the King's Bible. Her hub, 50-odd, and a Methodist, but takes the sacrament, and is to be seen any fair Sabbath with a pair of his boys off Bullock Harbour dapping on the Sound with a heavy-braked reel, or in a punt he has, training for flounder and pollock, and catches a fine bag, I hear. In sum, an infinite great fall of rain, and all refreshed, and will much increase the harvest. Yet those in ken say after wind and water, fire shall come, for a prognostication of Malachy's almanac, and I hear that Mr. Russell has done a prophetical charm of the same gist out of the Hindustanish for his Farmer's Gazette, to have 3 things in all, but this a mere fetch without bottom of reason for old crones and bairns. Yet sometimes they are found in the right guess with their queerities, no telling how.
With this came up Lenehan to the feet of the table to say how the letter was in that night's gazette, and he made a show to find it about him, for he swore with an oath that he had been at pains about it. But on Stephen's persuasion he gave over to search, and was bidden to sit near, by which he did mighty brisk. He was a kind of sport gentleman that went for a merry andrew or honest pickle, and what belonged of women, horseflesh, or hot scandal, he had it pat. To tell the truth, he was mean in fortunes, and for the most part anchored about the coffee-houses and low taverns, with crimps, ostlers, bookies, Paul's men, runners, flat caps, waistcoateers, ladies of the barnio, and other rogues of the game, or with a chanceable catchpole or a tipstaff, often at nights till broad day, of whom he picked up between his sack possets much loose gossip. He took his ordinary at a boiling cook's, and if he had but gotten into him a mess of broken victuals or a platter of tripes with a bare tester in his purse, he could always bring himself off with his tongue some randy quip he had from a punk or what not, that every mother's son of 'em would burst their sides. The other, Costello, that is, hearing this talk, asked, was it poetry or a tale? Faith, no, he says, Frank, that was his name, 'tis all about Kerry cows that are to be butchered along of a plague. But they could go hang, says he with a wink, for me with a bully beef, a pox on it. There's as good fish in this tin as ever came out of it, and very friendly he offered to take of some salty sprats that stood by, which he had eyed wishly in the meantime, and found the place which was indeed the chief design of his embassy, as he was sharp set. Mort au vache, says Frank then in the French language, that had been indentured to a brandy shipper that has a wine lodge in Bordeaux, and he spoke French like a gentleman too. From a child this Frank had been a do-naught, for his father, at Edinburgh, who could ill keep him to school to learn his letters and the use of the globes, matriculated at the university to study the mechanics, but he took the bit between his teeth like a raw colt, and was more familiar with the justiciary and the parish beadle than with his volumes. One time he would be a play actor, then a sutler or a welsher, then naught would keep him from the bear pit and the cocking main. Then he was for the ocean sea, or to hoof it on the roads with the Romany folk, kidnapping a squire's heir by favour of moonlight, or fecking maids' linen, or choking chickens behind a hedge. He had been off as many times as a cat has lives, and back again with naked pockets as many more, to his father, the Edborough, who shed a pint of tears as often as he saw him. "What?" says Mr. Leopold, with his hands across, that was earnest to know the drift of it. "Will they slaughter all? I protest I saw them but this day morning going to the Liverpool boat," says he. "I can scarce believe 'tis so bad," says he. And he had experience of the like brood beasts and of springers, greasy oggets and weather wools, having been some years before actuary for Mr. Joseph Cuff, a worthy salesmaster that drove his trade for livestock and meadow auctions hard by Mr. Gavin Lowe's yard in Prussia Street. "I question with you there," says he. "More 'tis like the who's of the timber tongue."
Mr. Stephen, a little moved but very handsomely, told him no such matter, and that he had dispatches from the Emperor's chief tail-tickler thanking him for the hospitality, that was sending over Dr. Rinderpest, the best-quoted cow-catcher in all Muscovy, with a bolus or two of physic to take the bull by the horns. "Come, come," says Mr. Vincent, "plain dealing. He'll find himself on the horns of a dilemma if he meddles with a bull that's Irish," says he. "Irish by name and Irish by nature," says Mr. Stephen, and he sent the ale purling about. "An Irish bull in an English china shop." "I conceive you," says Mr. Dixon. "It is that same bull that was sent to our island by Farmer Nicholas, the bravest cattle breeder of them all, with an emerald ring in his nose." "True for you," says Mr. Vincent, across the table, "and a bull's eye into the bargain," says he, "and a plumper and a portlier bull," says he, "never shit on shamrock. He'd horns galore, a coat of gold, and a sweet smoky breath coming out of his nostrils, so that the women of our island, leaving dough balls and rolling pins, followed after him, hanging his bulliness in daisy chains." "What for that?" says Mr. Dixon. "But before he came over, Farmer Nicholas, that was a eunuch, had him properly gelded by a college of doctors, who were no better off than himself. So be off now," says he, "and do all my cousin German the Lord Harry tells you, and take a farmer's blessing." And with that, he slapped his posteriors very soundly. But the slap and the blessing stood him friend, says Mr. Vincent, for to make up, he taught him a trick worth two of the others, so that maid, wife, abbess, and widow to this day affirm that they would rather any time of the month whisper in his ear in the dark of a cowhouse, or get a lick on the nape from his long, holy tongue, than lie with the finest strapping young ravisher in the four fields of all Ireland." Another then put in his word. "And they dressed him," says he, "in a point shift and petticoat with a tippet and girdle and ruffles on his wrists, and clipped his forelock and rubbed him all over with spermacetic oil and built stables for him at every turn of the road with a gold manger in each full of the best hay in the market, so that he could doss and dung to his heart's content." By this time the father of the faithful, for so they called him, was grown so heavy that he could scarce walk to pasture, to remedy which our cozening dames and damsels brought him his fodder in their apron laps, and as soon as his belly was full, he would rear up on his hind quarters to show their ladyships a mystery, and roar and bellow out of him in bull's language, and they all after him. "Aye," says another, "and so pampered was he that he would suffer naught to grow in all the land but green grass for himself, for that was the only colour to his mind. And there was a board put up on a hillock in the middle of the island with a printed notice saying, 'By the Lord Harry, green is the grass that grows on the ground.'" And, says Mr. Dixon, "if ever he got scent of a cattle raider in Roscommon, or the wilds of Connemara, or a husbandman in Sligo that was sowing as much as a handful of mustard or a bag of rapeseed, Out he run amok over half the countryside, rooting up with his horns whatever was planted, and all by Lord Harry's orders. There was bad blood between them at first, says Mr. Vincent, and the Lord Harry called Farmer Nicholas all the old nicks in the world, and an old whoremaster that kept 7 thralls in his house, and I'll meddle in his matter, says he. I'll make that animal smell hell, says he, with the help of that good pizzle my father left me. But one evening, says Mr. Dixon, when the Lord Harry was cleaning his royal pelt to go to dinner after winning a boat race, he'd spade oars for himself, but the first rule of the course was that the others were to row with pitchforks. He discovered in himself a wonderful likeness to a bull, and on picking up a black thumb chapbook that he kept in the pantry, he found sure enough that he was a left-handed descendant of the famous champion bull of the Romans, Bos Bovum, which is good bog Latin for boss of the show. After that, says Mr. Vincent, the Lord Harry put his head into a cow's drinking trough in the presence of all his courtiers, and pulling it out again told them all his new name. Then, with the water running off him, he got into an old smock and skirt that had belonged to his grandmother and bought a grammar of the bull's language to study, but he could never learn a word of it except the first personal pronoun, which he copied out big and got off by heart, and if ever he went out for a walk, he filled his pockets with chalk to write it up on what took his fancy. The side of a rock, or a tea-house table, or a bale of cotton, or a cork float. In short, he and the Bull of Ireland were soon as fast friends as an arse and a shirt. They were, says Mr. Stephen, and the end was that the men of the island, seeing no help was toward, as the ungrate women were all of one mind, made a wherry raft, loading themselves and their bundles of chattels on shipboard, set all masts erect, manned the yards, sprang their luff, heaved to, spread 3 sheets in the wind, put her head between wind and water, weighed anchor, ported her helm, ran up the Jolly Roger, gave 3 times 3, let the Bulgeen run, pushed off in their bumboat and put to sea to recover the main of America. Which was the occasion, says Mr. Vincent, of the composing by a boatswain of that rollicking chanty, Pope Peter's but to piss a bed, a man's a man, for a' that.